Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Recently, Ohio finalized its new congressional map, with a unanimous vote from the Ohio Redistricting Commission increasing the Republican advantage from 10 seats to a prediction of 12. This result comes after a trend of redistricting efforts across the country, starting with Texas and making its way to other states like California. Are people happy with the new Ohio changes, and is it possible that Ohio Republicans were overzealous when it came to their predictions? Covering the recent Ohio redistricting changes is Joe Ingles, senior reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Hello, Amy.
So going based on lawmakers' predictions, what is expected of this new map? How many seats are sort of guaranteed for Democrats, and how many are sort of guaranteed for Republicans?
Well, that's always, you know, contingent on a lot of things, but the way it was intended, I believe, was 12 to 3, 12 Republicans and three Democrats. That would take away two seats now held by Democrats.
And when you say take away the seats held by Democrats, this means that the Redistricting Commission redrew the lines to basically loop in more people who are Republican leaning. Explain how they can take away a seat.
Well, yeah, you can put you can draw these lines any way you want to. And of course, both sides say that they're meeting the constitutional description of how to do this. So let's put that out there. They would not say that they're drawing lines to benefit one side or the other. But truly, the map proposed by Democrats earlier drew it 8-7, which would have really not been it was a non-starter with the Republicans. But this map, it basically is 13-12-3, depending on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is they've added more Republicans into some of those Democratic districts to make those more favorable for a Republican candidate if you would have normal, you know, voters who vote a certain way, a predictable way.
Now, for as far as Columbus is concerned, the Columbus area kind of remained the same. I didn't really notice much change for the Central Ohio area. Is that true?
Yeah, Columbus was pretty much the same. It didn't change much.
So the changes we saw were in different parts of the state. Can you talk about the changes we saw and how it'll affect the congressmen around the Cincinnati area?
Well, okay, sure. The congressman in the Cincinnati area is Greg Landsman, and his district has become more Republican. I don't think it was ever intended to be a Democratic district, but that area of the state has been trending more Democrat in recent years. So because it's trending more Democratic than Greg Landsman won. The other district that's getting a lot of attention is Marcy Kaptur's district up in Northeast Ohio. And you've got, you know, she's one of the longest serving members of Congress. She's been there for many, many years. And she's, you know, one of the kind of the stalwarts. If you look at the Democrats, she's been one of those people who's been in the sweet spot voting on a lot of issues that especially unions and Democratic issues that Democrats care about. So she's her district has become more Republican, and that's led to a lot of controversy among people who say, hey, you're taking it out on a woman, and this woman happens to be a very effective Democrat.
Another potential, target's not the right word, I guess, but someone who they were looking at to try to redraw her seat was Amelia Sykes, who is more in the Cleveland-Akron area. And they kind of, it seems like they left her district pretty blue.
It is. It's a little more purple, I would say, but
Mm.
it's pretty blue. But you got to remember, like Amelia Sykes and Marcy Kaptur in the last election, they won by pretty small margins. Just a little bit of movement there can create a different outcome. Now, here's the thing. This is based on typical past, right? But we're in a time right now where typical is not what we see a lot of times. A lot of times we see things that are different. And we've got a lot of things, a lot of moving parts in Washington, D.C. right now. And that could always affect how someone who would have ordinarily voted Republican might vote in an election, or ordinarily voted Democrat might vote in an election.
Now, Democrats will possibly lose some seats depending on how things go, but it is seen as a necessary concession. Here is Senate Minority Leader Nikki Antonio.
Democrat representation in Ohio would have been decimated. And in the process, the people we fight for would have been left behind. Facing this impossible challenge with no certain path to preserve a fair map, we work towards compromise. But I understand and appreciate the anger we've heard from Ohioans today in this room, because you know what? I'm angry too.
So what does Nikki Antonio mean whenever she says, basically, we made some concessions, we compromised? Was this map just the best of some bad options for Democrats?
Well, like I said, in September, the Democrats put forward their own map, and it was 8-7, which was even more Democratic than the actual reality of what we have now, which is 10-5. So, they did make concessions, but there's a lot of questions, Amy, about this whole process, honestly, because the Democrats say that there's not the accountability that is in the Constitution, that's prescribed in the Constitution, that there should have been hearings on maps, that there should have been a lot of public involvement. The public should have been able to see it, react to it. And these maps were passed in all of 3 days. So, and behind closed doors mostly. So, that's the key here. I mean, a lot of the Democrats say they were shown maps, like Nikki Antonio said, that they were shown maps that were far more Republican and could have actually stripped away some of the Democratic districts that they now have. So, given that, they felt like the best case scenario was to go ahead and vote for it.
Is there, since it was voted on unanimously, is there going to be a lawsuit, or are these the maps we'll have for 6 years and everyone's going to leave it alone?
Well, I am thinking there will be a lawsuit, but I also think that there is an effort underfoot. In fact, I know that there's an effort underfoot to bring it back to the ballot. Last year there was a redistricting reform effort on the ballot that would have put a commission of from the public that had maybe more accountability, but definitely not put politicians in charge of their own of drawing their own districts. It would have been, retired judges, people who were appointed, who would represent the district in a what many thought would be a more transparent process. But that was shot down by voters in November. And a lot of people point to a lot of things that happened, like the ballot language that, mentioned the word gerrymander. That was ballot language that was adopted by the Republicans who dominate the ballot board. So, they look at, the way that this played out in the election and things that were said, to try to dissuade voters from passing it. And they're saying, really, voters want something more like that. And so the people behind redistricting change are looking at bringing it back. But, here's the problem. It's expensive to do that. You need a lot of volunteers. You need a lot of support to do that. So, right now they're just kind of in a holding pattern to see where this goes next and see how this plays out.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio's redistricting efforts with Joe Ingles, senior reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Ohio was unique compared to other states because other states are just drawing their map because they want to. But Ohio had to redraw their map this time by law. Is that correct?
That is right. When Ohio drew the maps earlier, they did not come to an agreement. Therefore, it was not a 10-year map. It was only for 4 years. And then that came up this year where they had to redraw the map.
Do you think there's a chance the Ohio Republicans, in drawing this 12-3 map, or 13-2, depending on how you look at it, do you think they spread themselves too thin? Is there a risk that they there could be a surprise for them and a Democrat could win a seat?
You know, there's always a surprise. Like I said, this 10-5 map, when it was adopted, a lot of people didn't think it was going to be a 10-5 map. They thought that it was going to be, you know, something like a 12-3 map, you know. But there are Democrats who are in districts, and there are districts that are turning more Democratic every day. And then if you throw in, you know, what happens next year if President Trump's popularity tanks to the point that people want to have an anti-Republican vote? What happens next year if, you know, a lot of the Republicans who are now in office lose favor with voters for some reason and their voters stay home? Or, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen. Gerrymandering is designed to try to give someone an advantage. But you really, when it comes down to it, you can try to give them an advantage, but it still doesn't mean it's always going to work out the way you intend it.
Yeah, we're going to talk more later in the hour about this idea of whether to call it redistricting or gerrymandering. I mean, both sides are gerrymandering. Both sides are redistricting. When do you change the word in your reporting from redistricting to gerrymandering?
Well, I think that when I use the word gerrymandering, it's an action. It's kind of a verb, you know, and it's usually when other people are calling it gerrymandering. But there are obvious times where it's gerrymandered, and, you know, you can talk about it being gerrymandered. But mostly the real term is redistricting. Gerrymandering is just the verb that's used for the process of drawing lines that are, you know, favoring one side clearly over the other. When you're talking about redistricting, it's a matter of whoever's in charge having the power. And let's face it, you know, the Republicans have the power now, but if you would have, 40 years ago, the Democrats had the power. And there we were hearing the same kind of things from the Republican side of the aisle that we hear now from the Democrats. So it's, you know, the process that we have and have had basically puts the politicians in power who rule the state house and rule the state offices. And right now that happens to be Republicans.
Well, many Ohioans, mainly Democrats, are not happy with this new map. But Brian Stewart, the co-chair of the Redistricting Commission, says people are never happy. Let's listen.
You know, folks are always going to complain about, you know, a bizarre squiggle of a line here, but we've been doing that since 1790. We are accounting for city lines, township lines. And so I think generally this map does keep communities of interest together. We've minimized county splits.
Is that true? We've been arguing about this since the 1790s.
Well, yeah, there's been, you know, I don't know about the 1790s, but it's been a long time. There has been a lot of argument over the way that we redistrict. And it's that, you know, a lot of the same concepts are the things that we, you know, hear the arguments about. You know, those lines are important. Where you draw those lines are, you know, you can keep communities together. That's one of the things that is actually in the Constitution, is to try to keep it together. But, you know, there's still splits in communities on any of these maps. And the question is where that line falls and what voting preferences are taken into account, although it's interesting that voting preferences really is not one of the things that's outlined in the constitutional process.
Brian Stewart in that clip mentioned bizarre squiggles. Did you notice any bizarre squiggles, or did anyone who hates these maps talk to you about a bizarre squiggle anywhere in the maps?
You know, there are always bizarre squiggles. And, you know, A lot of times we have, what do they call it? I want to say a moose on this map, but we've had the snake on the lake. We've had the duck. We've had all kinds of different shapes in there that were kind of odd to be able to form a district. And I think this one is a moose, if I'm not mistaken. One of the districts kind of looks like a moose head, but it just there it's sometimes a messy process. And a lot of voters don't understand this, and this is really one of the key issues here is redistricting is confusing. There's a whole lot that goes into it, and it's hard to understand. And if you're a voter who really isn't keyed in and paying attention all the time, this is probably not going to be something that you're going to understand real well. So if you don't understand it, it is really hard to affect change to make maps more fair or change a process or anything like that, because you're not going to really understand the basis of what's going on.
Do you think Ohioans, though, understand it more ever since that constitutional amendment and maybe through this process now? It's been in the news so much over the past few years. I feel like maybe they understand it more now.
I have seen, based on, I cover these meetings and you see who comes to them. I have seen more interest and more people talking about gerrymandering, but I still think there's a lot of confusion. I mean, last year during when the redistricting effort was on the ballot, we heard a whole lot of people who were confused about everything about it, really. And they were trying to learn it on the fly. And a lot of people went in and voted, and then they came out. And I had people telling me last year, and I put news stories out there about people who said they intended to vote for the redistricting change, but then they went in there, they read the ballot language, they got all confused from the ballot language, they voted no, and they didn't end up voting the way they wanted to. So, I mean, that's if you're not really well versed in it, it is so complicated sometimes. And if someone changes the ballot language to a way that's confusing, or if you see ads or you see people talking about it in ways that make you think, okay, this is a problem, all of that plays into the decisions you make about redistricting if it's on the ballot. And it's proven very difficult, actually, to make redistricting changes on the ballot. If you look at the current process we have, it took a lot of tries to actually get to that process, because from the previous process, which also was had its flaws and change needed changes or whatever that voters wanted. But anytime you go to pass redistricting, you're going to run into this. It's just confusing.
Well, I want to thank you for taking your time to talk about maps on the radio with us. We've been talking with Joe Ingles, senior reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for your time, Joe.
Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to talk about redistricting changes around the country. And that's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Right now, the House of Representatives has a Republican majority, but only by a narrow 5 seats. And with the midterms coming up, there's a chance the House might flip. To try and maximize their chances of maintaining a majority, Texas Republicans have started a redistricting race that is now traveling across the country and could impact many more states. Republicans and Democrats are battling for each congressional seat. How are states able to change districts outside of the census years, and how confident are they in the new districts that they are drawing? Joining us now is Erin Covey. She leads the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me on.
So things are still in flux. They might have changed since I checked yesterday. But at last count, Republicans were working on maps in four states, trying to add 9 seats. And then new maps in a couple of other states could flip 66 seats for the Democrats. There's always debate over redistricting, but have you ever seen this much eye for an eye in the debate?
No, I mean, what we're dealing with here is a pretty unprecedented, at least in the last several decades, mid-decade redistricting process. Typically, as you said, redistricting would happen at the beginning of each decade after the new census comes out. Mm-hmm. But what we've seen is that a number of states that have the power to draw new lines whenever they want to have unilaterally decided to move forward with redrawing their congressional maps in a way that benefits the party that controls the state. Ohio was the exception to this rule in that at the beginning of the year, Ohio was required to redraw its congressional lines due to its own state law. But for most of these states, they are moving forward with this to benefit their own party.
Yes, Ohio does stand out in the fact that we had to do it. But the other states that are choosing to do it, states like Texas and California and Utah, there's no absolute winners in politics. But out of the states that are in the news recently, where do you see, which one are you following the most? Which state is really sticking out to you right now?
Yeah, so in terms of the overall state of play, so we've seen 6 states redraw their lines so far this year. And those states are Texas, North Carolina, Ohio, California, Missouri, and now Utah. Now, out of those states, 4 of those states, Texas, Ohio, North Carolina, and Missouri, are drawing maps that could help Republicans pick up states, whereas California drew a map that allows Democrats to pick up several seats. And Utah has a new map also due to a long-running legal case that would allow Democrats to pick up a single seat. So when all is said and done, I don't think either party is going to have a significant advantage from redistricting. I think the most likely scenario is that Republicans are able to pad their majority maybe with another 3 seats when you do the math and count how many seats could flip on net. And so even as there are a couple of other states that are also looking at moving forward with redistricting before 2026, those states include Virginia, Florida, Maryland, maybe a couple of others. It's really interesting because in terms of how it's going to impact the battle for control of the House, it may not actually have that dramatic of an impact.
Yeah. The states like Virginia and Maryland and Florida that you mentioned, they might add in changes to their districts. When is this the last minute? When can we not do this anymore? Like, when do we need maps?
Well, at a certain point, you have to start holding primaries under whatever map is in place. And a lot of states have filing deadlines. Some states' filing deadlines have already passed in places like Illinois. And so, you know, there is a process potentially for some of these states choosing to move back primary dates or move back filing deadlines for candidates. But that's a tedious process. And the closer we get to, I would say, next spring, the more set in stone these lines will be. I think the latest states probably to redraw their maps will be states like Virginia and Florida, where we may not see resolution until later in the spring. But a number of these other states, you know, are running up against elections that they have to hold, and it's a pain to move elections back.
Now, you use the word resolution, but a lot of these maps are going to be litigated. Will there ever be a resolution? I mean, even if they hold, I guess judges will have to decide before a primary, but maybe not.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, I think in most of these cases, the states that have new maps are maps that will stay in place for 2026. Typically, when you have these legal battles over maps, the judge is not going to force the state to redraw its lines the summer before an election, because at that point, you know, either primary has already been held or primary is about to be held, and that just pushes the case, the ramifications of the case, into the next election cycle. But yeah, I mean, none of these, we don't know the full resolution of any of these lines. And of course, looming over all of this is the voting rights Act decision that the Supreme Court is poised to rule on at some point next year. And depending on when they issue a decision, that could also impact redistricting in a number of states.
Yeah, explain that a little bit more. How will that decision impact districts?
Yeah, so the Supreme Court is looking at a case that arose in Louisiana over their congressional map at the beginning of the decade and has made its way up to the Supreme Court now. And they are basically, from what we saw from the oral arguments in this case, it seems likely that they will rule in a way that weakens the power of the Voting Rights Act, which essentially protects these majority-minority districts that are largely in southern states. And these are states that have favored Democrats in recent years. So it could allow Republicans to draw themselves more favorable maps in places like Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, et cetera, where currently Republicans have the constraints of the Voting Rights Act and that they can't crack these majority-minority districts that are in these states. But without that in place, then they could go further in drawing maps that benefit them.
Mm. And we don't know. I mean, they already heard the case, but we don't know when the decision will be. Will it impact the primaries or the 2026 election?
Yeah, that's the question. So we had oral arguments in October. Typically, what we would see is the Supreme Court would rule on this sort of case in June, but they could choose to rule earlier. And if they decided to issue a decision, say, in January, then that would give states like Louisiana and potentially other southern states time to redraw their maps ahead of the primary. But most folks I've talked to think it's more likely that they will issue a decision in the normal schedule, at which point that would not probably impact any maps this cycle. However, it likely would spur states to redraw their maps ahead of the 2028 elections. And so this mid-decade redistricting is definitely not going away anytime soon.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about redistricting with Aaron Covey, lead on the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. I learned a new term in preparing for this show. Instead of gerrymandering, it's called dummymandering, which is putting too much confidence in a district, so the map you draw backfires. Is that possible in any places? Do you feel the map might backfire on what they planned?
That's a good question. I think in all of these states, they were drawn in a way to not dilute the party's vote in places where they're defending seats. So for example, in Texas, Texas redrew its map in a way that should allow Democrats to pick up, or should allow Republicans to pick up 3 to 5 more seats. Now they did that in a way without pulling too many Republican voters from the other Republican held districts and risk putting those seats at risk of flipping in a blue wave. And so I do think that the Texas map should hold up even if we are in a very favorable environment for Democrats next year. But, you know, we don't know how political these states are going to shift politically in the long term. And, you know, we have seen a lot of times states will draw one map at the beginning of a decade that they think will protect their party in one part of the state. And then the political winds change in ways that folks were not anticipating, and that sometimes does backfire. But in terms of this cycle, I would not say that any of the maps that were drawn will turn out to be dummy manders in the traditional sense of the word.
In the traditional sense of a new word I had never heard of. Is that a new term for you, or has it been around?
It's been around. You know, I think a lot of times there's a lot, at the beginning of a decade, there's a lot of speculation that if one party goes too far in trying to pick up as many seats as possible, that they will accidentally put some of their own incumbents at risk. And there's a couple of states like Nevada, for example, where we had wondered if their map would turn out to be a dummy mander and that it would result in one of the three Democrats there losing their seats. But so far it has held up. And so we don't always know until obviously elections are held how these races are going to play out and how these lines are going to hold up. But I will say for the states that have been that have redrawn their lines so far, I think these maps will hold and work as they were intended.
Let's swing back and talk about Ohio for a minute. Ohio currently has 10 Republican representatives in Congress and 5 Democrats, and they drew a new map that now leans 12-3-ish. Some people call it 13-2. Most people are saying 12-3 and adding an ish in there. What did you think of Ohio's redistricting process? I mean, you have a national picture here, and as you mentioned, Ohio had to do it. What did you think of Ohio's map drawing this session?
Yeah, so Ohio has a unique process in that they were required to redraw their lines this year because the current map that they have was going to expire after 4 years. And that's because the map that is currently in place in Ohio was passed purely on a party line basis by Republicans in the legislature. And so what most folks had expected going into the cycle was that Republicans would just do that again this year and draw another map passed on a party line basis that would stay in place for another 4 years, essentially. But what happened was that essentially Democrats had begun to make moves to potentially put the map on the ballot in a statewide referendum. And there were a lot of questions over what that would look like and what the legal fallout from that would be and whether or not it would be possible for Democrats to have a favorable outcome if they did put the map on the ballot statewide. But that made Republicans nervous enough about passing a map on a party line basis that they instead decided to come to a compromise with Democrats on the Bipartisan Redistricting Commission. So they ended up drawing a map that did an interesting thing. Basically what it did was it took one incumbent, Amelia Sykes, who was in a highly competitive seat and made her seat a couple of points more favorable. So now it favors Democrats, clearly. And then they took Greg Landsman, a member who was in a light blue seat, and put him in a more competitive seat that is a pure toss-up. And then they took Marcy Kaptur, a Democrat who was actually in a pretty Republican-leaning seat but had overperformed a lot of other Democrats in her district and had won a series of tough races, and put her in an even more Republican-leaning seat, but one that is still competitive. So Ohio still has three of its Democrats are in highly competitive races, and there's certainly a world in which all three of them manage to win re-election and keep the split in the Ohio delegation between 5 Democrats and 10 Republicans. The more likely scenario, or the most likely scenario, I would say, is that Democrats are able to hold 9 seats and Republicans are able to hold 11 seats and Democrats are able to hold 4 seats. A 12-3 map is also possible. But I do think that it's unlikely that Republicans will be able to flip all 3 of these districts now, which is what they were hoping to do at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we didn't see anything that went on behind the scenes. There were rumors that there was this 14-1 map that they were threatened with, and that's how the Democrats ended up compromising. But either way, there's a lot of people in Ohio from the Democratic side who are upset about this map. They say that because it was voted in unanimously, it's here for 6 years, and they say that the Democrats gave in too quickly with this 12-3 map. What do you make of comments like that, where they should have fought harder, I guess?
I mean, I think that this was actually a pretty good deal for Democrats. Mm-hmm. If you compare it to what Republicans were proposing to do, they were looking at maps that would have completely demolished Amelia Sykes and Marcy Kaptur's districts and made them impossible for them to win, and would have put Greg Landsman in a more competitive district. This map gives all 3 of these incumbents the ability to still win their races, particularly if we're in another blue wave environment. And so I do think that this is a pretty decent map for Democrats, all things considered. And I think the Democrats who proposed this deal on the commission see it that way as well. Of course, there's a little bit of disagreement about whether or not they could have gotten a better deal or whether or not a referendum that kept Republicans from drawing a more aggressively gerrymandered map would have been successful for Democrats. And I think there's a lot of open questions about that. And so this was maybe the less risky route for Democrats that, you know, doesn't have maybe quite the upside of if they were able to overturn a Republican drawn map in a referendum, but also is not nearly as bad for them as we had expected the new Ohio map to be.
We mentioned that Ohio had to redraw the maps mid-decade because of the way our laws are written, but there's most other states are redrawing them mid-decade. Just because leaders want to. And tell me more about this doing it not at the start of the decade, not with the U.S. Census data being reported, is every state have different rules around this, or is it kind of like the leaders in the state are allowed to do whatever they want?
Yeah, it's a good question. So there is obviously no federal ban on mid-decade redistricting. And in most states, there's no ban on mid-decade redistricting as well. And so it is really up to the states themselves to decide if they want to redraw their map in the middle of the decade. Typically, of course, states have held to the norm of only redrawing lines at the beginning of the decade in response to the new census. But this is not something that is illegal in most of these places. Now, some states like California had an independent redistricting commission that only would redraw lines at the beginning of the year. So in order to draw a more favorable map for Democrats there, Democrats essentially had to get California voters to overturn that independent commission for a cycle, set it aside, and give Democrats full power over the redistricting process, which is what voters did earlier this month in November. And so overall, there aren't that as many guardrails on this process as you might think, though it is fairly uncommon. We did see a couple of times at the beginning of the century, Texas and Georgia also decided to redraw their maps in a way that would benefit the party that controlled those states. So that was Republicans. And that was similar in that this was in the middle of the decade and it was purely spurred by partisan reasons. But the number of states that have entered the ring this time around is really rare and has, you know, been driven largely by Trump and the White House, who really leaned on Texas Republicans at the beginning of the year to redraw their lines. And once Texas moved forward with redistricting, that set off a bit of an arms race and all these other red and blue states to try to offset the gains that one party would make through redistricting.
We are discussing redistricting efforts on 89.7 NPR News. And coming up, Erin Covey is going to stay with us. She is the lead on the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. And we're going to discuss more about redistricting efforts. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. Redistricting, or its more partisan form, gerrymandering, used to be a topic that was left out of politics. However, redistricting has become its own political talking point, with major politicians even using its effectiveness to try and garner support. Should redistricting change the way we feel about voting? And what is the future of redistricting efforts in this country? Still with us is Erin Covey, lead on the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. Thanks again for being here, Erin.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So one interesting way we're seeing redistricting being used to is to garner political support for a particular person. This is Gavin Newsom, his Prop 50, which really boasted his popularity amongst national Democrats. Why do you think Newsom is being so public about this Prop 50? And, you know, what is it going to help him accomplish? Because I feel like I want to call it Newsom's Prop 50 instead of California's Prop 50.
Yes, I mean, I think that this has gotten so much attention because this map drawing process in California was really one of the few ways that if you're a Democrat right now, you can say concretely that you are pushing back against Trump and fighting back against him, which is what Democratic voters want from their leaders right now. We see that more than ever, there's a lot of frustration with Democrat leadership in Congress because they're perceived as not doing enough to fight back against Trump. Now, of course, they're in a difficult position because they're in the minority. And so there really is little that they can actually do. And same with these Democratic governors. But if you're someone like Newsom, who, of course, is also looking for ways to boost his profile, because it's widely reported that he is considering running for president in 2028, this is one way that you can put yourself out there to voters and point to yourself as someone who is doing something concrete to push back against Trump. And this was, you know, clear fact from the messaging in the ads leading up to this Prop 50 election, down to the ballot language, which explicitly characterized Prop 50 as a way to push back against Trump's efforts to redistrict lines in Texas. And so even though gerrymandering is a broadly unpopular thing because it's clearly for partisan gain, and usually voters don't like that sort of thing and view it as unfair, when Democrats are doing it in order to push back against Republican gerrymandering in Texas, and when it's framed that way, it's something that a lot of Democratic voters in California were clearly very willing to get on board with. And this Prop 50 passed by a wide margin. It passed by an even wider margin than Kamala Harris won the state by in 2024, in evidence of how energized Democrats are about this issue. And, you know, now we've seen a couple of other governors in blue states with presidential ambitions, like Wes Moore in Maryland and J.B. Pritzker in Illinois, have also talked about redistricting. And that's also, you know, both a way to curry favor with Democratic voters nationwide and potentially get their name out there ahead of a potential 2028 presidential campaign.
You mentioned that in California, they had an independent commission to draw the maps. And so this put the independent commission on hold temporarily to redraw the maps for this election cycle. Do you know how many states have independent commissions versus the party in power drawing the lines?
Yeah, so it's a minority of states. And most of the states that have independent commissions or bipartisan redistricting commissions are blue or purple states. And so when we first started this kind of mid-decade redistricting arms race, the conventional wisdom, I think, was that Republicans would have a significant advantage because they simply controlled the redistricting process in more states. And a lot of these states, like California, had passed these redistricting reforms two decades ago. So their independent commission had been in place a long time. But there were a lot of states that passed similar reforms in 2018, which of course is what Ohio did as well when it set up their own bipartisan redistricting commission. Now, it did not necessarily work out as well as advocates for the commission had hoped, but there's a number of other states like Washington, New Jersey, Virginia, Colorado, and of course, California that and Michigan that have these independent redistricting commissions. And so that has prevented some states like Colorado, which is fully controlled by Democrats, but has an independent redistricting commission, from joining the fray. And California was only able to do it because they were able to put it on the ballot and allow voters to actually amend their state constitution for an election cycle in order to move forward with gerrymandering their own map. But for a number of other states, it's a bit more complicated. Now, Virginia is also looking at doing a similar thing to what California did. It's a similar situation where Democrats now control the governorship and both state houses in the legislature. Mm-hmm. But because they have a redistricting commission, they have to have a statewide ballot amendment to amend the state constitution in order to move forward with redrawing their lines in a way that benefits Democrats. But it looks like they are going to do so, and that will potentially be on the ballot later next spring.
Okay, so in Virginia, when they have their primary, they would have it on the ballot to redraw it. Can they redraw it in the middle of the cycle, or would it be more for 2028? That's confusing.
That's a good question. Yeah. This would have to be a special election. So what they would have to do essentially is move back the primary date to August, and then ahead of the primary, they would hold a special election for the ballot referendum in probably sometime in April. Would be able to do it in time for 2026, but it is a very tight timeline, which is why there's a little bit of uncertainty about whether or not they can pull it off.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about redistricting with Aaron Covey, lead on the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. When you're doing your reporting and talking about redistricting, when do you use the word gerrymandering versus redistricting? Is there like a line that's crossed there for you? Or can you tell me about those two words, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good question. So redistricting is, of course, the broader term that encapsulates redrawing congressional and legislative district lines, typically at the beginning of a decade. Gerrymandering, when we're talking about gerrymandering, we're usually talking about partisan gerrymandering, which is redistricting that is done in a way that explicitly benefits one party. There's also racial gerrymandering, which is illegal under the Constitution federally, but there are a number of lawsuits over maps, particularly in southern states, that are over racial gerrymandering claims. But typically, when we're talking about gerrymandering, people are talking about partisan gerrymandering. So partisan gerrymandering, it's difficult to judge when a state crosses into this territory. For example, in California, the original map was drawn by an independent commission that was nonpartisan. However, if you look at the map and compare it to how California votes statewide, it is a pretty favorable map for Democrats. But I don't know, because of the way that it was drawn, that you would call that necessarily a gerrymander, whereas the new map, which redraws a bunch of districts in order to explicitly boost Democrats running there, I think you can safely call that an example of partisan gerrymandering on the Democrats' part. In the same way, the Texas map is an example of a Republican gerrymander. The North Carolina map is an example of probably one of the most egregious gerrymanders in the country, I would say. And then Democrats already have pretty gerrymandered maps in places like Illinois and Maryland. So there's a lot of different standards that go into whether or not a map is considered fair. And there's a lot of different best practices for redistricting that are taken into account, but there's not a set standard or a set rule necessarily that can draw a clean line between what is partisan gerrymandering and what is a fair map.
So do we need the federal government to step in, and we need like a federal law that says every state should have an independent commission? Like, how do we get rid of gerrymandering, or is this just the way politics is going to play out forever and ever?
Yeah, I mean, at the federal level, Democrats have introduced legislation in the past to ban gerrymandering and to set up independent redistricting commissions in every state. But, you know, that's something that is unlikely to pass, particularly in this current political environment where control of the government tends to be divided. And particularly with the Senate, Democrats aren't in a good position to control the Senate in the near future. And so whether or not they are able to pass some sort of widespread reform to the way that we conduct elections would probably be dependent on that. But in the meantime, you know, we saw a number of states in the past that have decided to move forward with their own independent commissions, and it's been accomplished on a statewide, state-by-state basis. But I do think that going forward, now that we're in a world where mid-decade redistricting is more common and that norm has sort of been broken, I'm not sure if a lot of states that may have been inclined to pursue those reforms are going to want to do that, because in order to do so, in a lot of these places, it would require Democrats to give up some of their power over the redistricting process. And after the way the cycle has gone, I think there's a lot of states that would not necessarily want to do that. And so we'll see what this looks like going forward. But it doesn't seem like, at least in the short term, that there is going to be more independent redistricting commissions anytime soon.
I feel like we need to just get people out of it and just have AI draw all the maps. Would that work?
That actually sounds like a terrible idea, because then we wouldn't actually know who was drawing the lines.
Right. I know. I'm kidding. I'm kidding, sort of. We can't trust people. We can't trust AI. Okay. Well, and a common critique of redistricting is that it devalues individual votes. Do you think that's a valid feeling for some voters, depending on what district they're in? They feel like their vote doesn't count because they got drawn into this big red or big blue district?
Yeah, I mean, look, that is the difficulty with single member districts. You know, there are always going to be voters in the minority who don't have their preferred representation in their district. If you are a Democrat that lives in a district where 70% of voters are Republicans, then this is a district that is almost certainly going to elect Republicans. And so it is kind of inherently unfair, but that is a feature of the way that our single member redistricting process works in the U.S.
Over the weekend, an Indiana Republican was called out by Donald Trump, by President Trump over the weekend, for not pursuing redistricting in his state. Is there going to be more national pressure? Do you think in the next couple of months we'll see more states jumping in and trying to get it done before spring primaries?
That's a good question. I think I mentioned Virginia. They are moving forward with redistricting, and that's a Democrat-led effort. And then I think Republicans will likely redraw the map in Florida as well next year. But in terms of states like Indiana and Kansas, which have been under a lot of pressure from the White House to redraw their congressional lines, it seems like there's a significant segment of Republican state legislators in both states who are opposed to mid-decade redistricting. And for some of it, it may be their own political interests if they represent competitive districts where they have a lot of Democratic voters in their districts and independent voters who would be frustrated by their state legislators supporting a nakedly partisan move. It could backfire on their own individual political prospects. But of course, they are under pressure from the White House. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if some of these state legislators might have primaries from Republicans who are backed by Trump. I don't know if that will change their position on redistricting, but the longer they hold out, the less time there is for these states to actually move forward with it. And so it seems pretty unlikely at this point that states like Indiana and Kansas actually have the time to move forward with redistricting, because these are all places where the White House has been pushing them to do this for months now. And there have been a number of holdouts who haven't budged. And so I'm not sure that there's much that the White House could do to convince them to change their minds at this point.
We've been talking about redistricting around the country and in Ohio with Erin Covey, lead on the U.S. House of Representatives coverage at the Cook Political Report. Erin, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.